Okay, we are here.
Hey, everybody.
I just want to make sure that we are being heard.
Hi.
Great, thanks. All right. I'm Tom.
I'm Jacqueline.
My wife, Jacqueline. And we do this every Thursday at 10:30. And typically we start out with a prayer. And I guess I'll just start. We just watched an outstanding movie, and we're still kind of reeling from it. It just finished about 15 minutes ago. And I just feel the energy of that movie coursing the experience of it just coursing through our bodies right now, and usually there's a desire to try to define it and figure out what it is, but what we're doing is we're just being with it, not naming it, and just watching what that energy is, and totally independent of any past learning or anything like that, or just being with that energy, what that energy feels like, and just looking at it and let it be. And so while we're going through that, we're here to share what comes through us, and we pray that whatever it is humble and purpose and is helpful possibly to another. So thanks for being here, and we're going to start.
And amen.
Amen. All right. So we finished up last week at the top of page 42. Matthew chapter 20. I don't know why I had to repeat that. I'm sure you heard, Jacqueline.
No, it's good. I thought, oh, was he going to say it? I shouldn't have said it.
Okay, we'll start. I say, love your brother. Serve him as you would serve me. And as you do, you serve yourself. For you have acknowledged that it is all the same, and that for its sameness you are grateful. You will go far on your gratitude for sameness. I say to you, gratitude for sameness will carry you to heaven. And that paragraph there, a bell rings in my head, and it takes me back to a teaching that I was watching with Gangaji, and she was talking about that it's always just a humbling of the mind. That's what's going on every time there's an apparent opposition or an opposing thought. It's always just a humbling of the mind, and that last sentence, I say to you, gratitude for sameness will carry you to heaven. That's really a humbling. There's a real humbling for being grateful for being exactly the same as every other being on this planet. I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, and I just want to say that I found this really moving. This gratitude for sameness, because, it's just, there's nothing to earn. I'm not trying to be any more special in the grand scheme of things than anyone else. I'm it's wholehearted acceptance. I mean, I feel in connecting with that sense of sameness, I feel absolutely wholeheartedly accepted in the open arms of the universe. You know, I don't have to earn anything. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to say anything. I don't have to gain anything. I don't have to be good enough. I don't have to. It's just such an embrace of acceptance. And I just really am really connecting with that in a very visceral way. And that's all I want to say about that.
Yeah. You know, it also, you know, for me, it brings back, it's a little practice that I do. And every now and then it comes to me that I feel like every day of the year, somebody on this planet is waking up. There's no question about it. I think it's happening more and more. And when I realize that, I feel such gratitude for that one who is experiencing the universal consciousness, who is being born into that universal consciousness. I feel true gratitude for that, because that's just that's the sameness. That's that oneness that we're talking about. My gratitude brings that realization closer to me. Just knowing that somebody's waking up, just feeling in my heart the gratitude of consciousness awaking to itself. The next paragraph: the truth is always true. It is just that you do not see it now. And because you are blind, you cannot see it of your own power. So do not try to see that there are no differences by exercising your own will, for it is your will that there be differences. The one who has willed to see differences will see what he has willed to see. Instead, be willing to lay down your will and ask me to give you sight. As you make room for my will, you will be given my will. And through my will, you shall see. Again, there is the interposing of the apparent. As if it does speak in a dualistic terms, but we come to see that when we really sit with it and we're really silent with it, we recognize that it is our own self that speaks that wisdom to us. We'll continue with NTI, Matthew chapter 21. Oh, this is coming from the New Testament.
Yeah, read it. Okay. We are in NTI. We are on page 42, NTI Matthew chapter 21. It's suggesting that we read verses 1 through 5 from the Bible. So I've got that here on the computer. And it says, Jesus comes to Jerusalem as king. As they approached Jerusalem and came to Bethphage on the Mount of Olives, Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and at once you will find a donkey tied there with her colt by her. Untie them and bring them to me. If anyone says anything to you, say that the Lord needs them, and he will send them right away." This took place to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet. "Say to daughter Zion, see, your king comes to you, gentle and riding on a donkey, and on a colt, the foal of a donkey." Sit.
Okay. Chapter 21. The donkey is a symbol. It is a symbol intended to teach that you must put your expectations aside. For expectations are a setup opportunity for, let me start that again. For expectations are a setup opportunity for judgments, and it is judgment that keeps you separate from your brothers. Be willing to let go of your expectations, and you will not be tempted to judge. Well, expectations, I know that we have expectations in the world. There's a physical world, and we have imposed physical laws upon this world. And then there are moral laws that we impose on the world. And there are ethical laws and codes of conduct and behavior. And they're all expectations. Those are all expectations, because nothing happens because of anything else. There is no sequence. There is no true sequencing. There is no A, B, C. That is the way of this world, but it is not the way in reality. And so, to the degree that we cling to our expectations is to the degree that we cling to this person who we have that has manifested itself as a separate individual. And so expectations, I remember seeing in, I think it was in the Course in Miracles, but I know, I think it was in NTI, it was recognize things as temptation. And expectations are a temptation. They are a temptation to see yourself as separate from others. It sets up boundaries for judgment and condemnation and ridicule and all those other things that go obviously with it. So that's my. I'm going to turn it over to Jack.
Because I'm grabbing the mic, so take it away from me. Okay, I'm sorry about y'all's ears.
So sorry.
I dropped the mic. I'm terribly sorry. okay, so let's talk about this expectations thing for a minute. And the best way I think to address this is, by contrast with like what Michael Singer is teaching in The Untethered Soul. You know, he's like one path to happiness. Or a recommended path to happiness is a commitment to unconditional happiness. You're going to be happy no matter what. We could be happy no matter what, but we're not. We decide not to be happy. We decide not to be happy when people, things, situations don't meet my expectations for them. So, for example, when my wife forgets my birthday, and by the way, it was Tom's birthday 2 days ago. I remembered about 8 o'clock that night. When my wife forgets my birthday, I expect her to remember my birthday. I expect, that's what we do in polite society, right? We remember each other. We have the courtesy to remember each other's birthday. I don't know. I guess I can't speak for Tom. Had he forgotten mine, I'd have been pretty daggone upset. And that's really the point. It's like we set up these expectations. Here's how people are supposed to act. Here's, if you love me, this is how you'll behave. If you're my friend, you'll be on time. You'll buy every other meal. I buy once, you buy, I buy, you buy. Those are the rules. And if you're not doing that, then I'm going to be unhappy. I expect my children to, grow up and be contributing members of society and not do drugs. I've been dealing with this issue a lot in the courtroom. I expect everybody to do their job And when they don't, I'm pissed off and I'm hollering at people. And you know, and who's unhappy? Well, we all are once I start hollering at people, right? But I mean, the point is, I'm setting up these expectations. This should be done this way. This is the professional way to do that. And then when it's not that way, I'm unhappy. You know, God, it just wears you out. But we have all these expectations set up about everything. I mean, about everything, about how the mailman ought to put the mail in the box. He should put it in there nice and neat, not crumple it, not shove stuff in there. He should take his time, right? The guy in front of me should drive a little bit faster or a little bit slower, or, you know, stop sooner for the light, or run the, you know, you got a minute, go on through the light. You know, I have expectations about everything, the way everything should be, the way everything should go. And as long as it goes the way I expect it to go, then I'm happy. And if it doesn't, well, get out of the way. Because I'm not going to be happy.
That's great. Because really, we're on a planet with 7 billion people. And that's 7 billion separate wills, personal wills. You know, there's one will, but really there's 7 billion different, opposing
expectations,
right. Everybody's got their own agenda. And,
that's right.
You know, and it's just impossible to gain happiness when you're trying to appease the will of the I thought.
Yeah, because it's splintered into 7 billion versions.
Right. Thank you. All right. Peace comes from laying down your expectations and your judgments and accepting the truth as it is. There is no other way to accept the truth, for to accept it in any way other than as it is not to accept the truth. It is to accept delusion over truth, and in delusion you are lost from truth. It is better to meet your brother without expectations. In this way, you have opened your heart to see him as he is. In finding him, you find yourself. Well, I would just say that that is the Course in Miracles follows that same the relationship as in relationship as you see your brother, so will you see yourself. And so it's not the way everybody does it, but there are people who just they just sit with themselves and they look at themselves completely. And I'm studying a lot with Nisargadatta right now, and I know that he went into 3 years of silence, and he didn't use a lot of interactive means to come to his realization. But if you're here and there is a brother there, definitely use him. Or her, because if there is a relationship present and you're not using it for the purpose that it was intended, it's intended to collapse time. It's intended to take as much delay out of the process as possible. And if it is not utilized in that way, if it's utilized in a way to for self-aggrandizement, then it's not being maximized at all. And so to be able to use it in the way that it's truly intended, the purpose that it's for, the purpose that it is truly for. And it takes time to take a step back sometimes and to truly look at it and say, and just to redetermine your process, to reassess. And and one of the things that I hearing with Nisargadatta, he's saying, what is so important is to remember what needs to be remembered.
Yeah, and I just want to say about this, it's better to meet your brother without expectations. In this way, you have opened your heart to see him as he is. In finding him, you find yourself. You know, the Course in Miracles says you make an ego for yourself and one for everybody else. So you, this is saying basically the same thing as judge not, lest ye be judged. I mean, if you're seeing, if you're meeting your brother and you're seeing somebody who's supposed to conform to this role or that role, whatever it is, okay, you're going to be my acquaintance, you're going to be my lover, you know, you're going to be my teacher. And so I'm assigning these roles to people, and then I'm expecting them to do that. So if I'm holding these people to their roles, well, guess what? I'm holding myself to my own roles. I'm not allowing myself to be any more than I'm allowing that person to just be who they are. No, I've got something. You know, if I've got this this puzzle in my mind, there's this finished puzzle, right? And all these pieces fit together, and you fit that role, and you fit that role, and you fit that role, and here's where my piece connects to your piece. So, you know, you're either seeing separate persons with separate roles to play and setting up expectation for all of these persons, including yourself, or you're allowing all things to be as they are. You're meeting your brother where your brother is and allowing your brother to be who your brother is. And if you're not doing that with them, I can guarantee you, you're not doing that with yourself.
Excellent. Very good. Thank you. Top of page 43.
Wait.
Okay.
Because it's
it's back on the book.
The Bible.
Okay.
Okay. So, let me find it. So we're reading Matthew 21, 12 through 13, Jesus at the temple. Jesus entered the temple courts and drove out all who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves. It is written, he said to them, my house will be called a house of prayer, but you are making it a den of robbers.
All right, top page 43. The money changers in the temple represent the ego, which is the belief in separateness. For they were not in the temple to commune with God or brother. The money changers entered the temple for their own purposes. But the temple is the symbol of oneness and communion. Oneness and communion are the only purposes within the temple. So the money changers were like foreigners in the temple, because their purpose was different than its purpose. In this way, you are like the temple and the money changers. Your truth is like the symbol of the temple. Your only purpose is oneness and communion. But you have allowed a foreign purpose to reside within your mind. And by focusing on the foreign purpose, your true purpose has become lost to you. Jesus would have you clear your mind of the foreign purpose, that your true purpose may be remembered. And that foreign purpose is, I just know it as the I thought.
Yeah.
I know that foreign purpose, yeah. And I've looked at where does it say that? And by focusing on the foreign purpose, your true purpose has become lost to you. So it's just through time. through the illusion of time, focusing on this unreal purpose, I've become hypnotized. I've become mesmerized. I've become divided. And what this teaching does, it allows for the return. It's like the prodigal coming back and to clear the mind of the foreign purpose, that your true purpose may be remembered.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's the I thought, and I think your purpose becomes convincing yourself and everyone around you that, no, that's really who I am. This person that I've made up, no, really, I am. I'm really smart. I'm really pretty. Mm-hmm. I'm really, you know, people like me. I mean, all the time. I am dedicated to building myself up and assuring myself that no, this answers the question. This is who we are. So that's and it's time consuming. And like you said, it's mesmerizing. Yeah. It takes everything you've got. You don't even know you're doing it.
Yeah.
Unless you're watching for it.
Right.
Unless you're attempting to change the purpose. To the true purpose, which is, in fact, the same question. You know, both the ego and the true self asks the same question, who am I? But they're
right.
Different answers, right?
Yeah.
Because the ego will create a self.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. And there is a true answer to the question, who am I?
Right.
And that's the changing the purpose, and letting who you think you are be undone.
Yeah.
Is the true purpose.
Right.
Not continue to try to shore up this, you know, crappy thing that you've made to tell yourself who you are.
Yeah, and it's funny because I know from my perspective, in all the world, I am really not truly impressed with anybody's I thought. You know, I'm not...
Particularly mine. Well, but
still... I hold to the position that mine needs to be enhanced and protected and seen as really valuable. And that's part of the system. That's the system working within this particular pod of consciousness right here. It's just a system. It's impersonal. And that's what it's really helpful to me to remember, that this is a system. This is not personal. And it makes it a lot much more manageable. It makes it very easily addressable. There's not all this nonsense, all this psychodrama that I got to go through. There is this system. It's a program that's running in this consciousness right now. I'm very aware of it. I watch it. I watch the I thought when it comes. And when it's not overtly present and taking up all my focus, then I'm in the I am. I'm dropping into the heart and recognizing the truth of my being.
Sweet.
Okay. We're at 14. Yeah. Confusion comes into the mind when you listen to a purpose other than the purpose of God. When you have forgotten the one purpose of oneness and communion, you have forgotten who you are. In your forgetfulness, you are lost. Become like little children, free of expectations clouded by foreign purpose. Open your eyes and see what is before you, for it is true purpose that awaits only your recognition and your welcome. Confusion, which we started with, is recognizable. You can recognize it, and I was just recently commenting on this on Facebook. You can recognize it by the way you feel. It's really a good barometer to use. Not so much to go into the mind. For me, confusion has there's a burden of baggage. I can feel it in the body. I feel it in my heart. That's when I know that I'm looking at something else. I'm valuing something else. I'm valuing a foreign purpose, and so it's really this being conscious to the feelings that are going on. And there's really not even a need to, for me, I'm finding it's nice to not even describe what the feeling is anymore. that's part of the retracing the steps. We did need language. We needed language because we needed to understand what the hell we were going through. On the way back, it's nice to let go. I'm finding it nice to let go of the language and not need to describe the feeling, but just look at the feeling in the raw, in its complete nakedness, without giving it a term or anything like that. And it's just energy. That's what I'm finding. It's just energy. And there's a low energy and there's a higher energy. And I find that I can choose the higher energy. And I, most of the time I'm choosing, well, I won't say most of the time. I used to choose the lower energy all the time, most of the time. But I can feel the difference. I can feel that when I choose the higher energy is without thought. Once I choose the higher energy, I'm in my heart already. I don't have to go there. If I'm in the lower energy, I'm looking at a foreign purpose. And that is the I thought. I'm thinking of myself as a person. The withering fig tree.
Wait.
Okay.
Well, first of all, and so this chapter ends with, it starts with, let's put your expectations aside, and then it ends with, a similar admonition. Become like little children, free of expectations, clouded by foreign purpose. You see what you want to see. You're a co-creator, so you will see what you want to see. Because you're a co-creator, because you'll see what you want to see, until you let go of that foreign purpose, you won't be free to see the truth. So that's what's being said here.
Excellent. Yeah.
So another reading from the Bible, huh? We got to quit.
Keep changing seats every time. Mm-hmm. We look like the Keystone Cops here. Let me. All right. It's.
Lots of activity on the board there too. Lots of stuff going on. Okay. So here we are. The story of Jesus and the fig tree. It says, and he left them and went out of the city to Bethany, where he spent the night. Early in the morning, as Jesus was on his way back to the city, he was hungry. Seeing a fig tree by the road, he went up to it, but found nothing on it except leaves. Then he said to it, "May you never bear fruit again." Immediately, the tree withered.
Thank you. All right. The withering fig tree is a tree that bears no fruit for the Son of God to eat. Likewise, the ego bears no fruit for the Son of God. Let the ego go. Let the belief in separation go from your heart, that it may bear no more fruit within your mind. The Son of God is pure consciousness, and it's just purposeless consciousness. The ego is just it's consciousness under a spell. What seems impossible to you is not impossible. In fact, it is all that is truly possible, for the belief in separation cannot hold you prisoner, because it is not true. It is not real. It is nothing but a figment of your imagination in which you have placed your faith. Through this, you can see the power of your faith. But I ask you to remove your faith from what you believe now and place your faith in me, that you may see through different eyes. Surely you will see differently. And again, when he says, what seems impossible to you is not impossible. And right there, he's really, that's addressing the ego or the I thought, because the I thought is always impressing upon itself how impossible this seems to be, how powerful it is, and how I am gripped and I'm in its grasp and there is no escaping. But it's important to know that's the I thought speaking to itself. And if that's what's going on, then, you know, it's absolutely right. So we have to, there is a higher voice. And so we have to choose that.
I think we're being heckled on the board.
Oh, that's good.
I'm sorry, I'll pull it up again. Let's see. Okay. I don't know what statement they agreed with, but if you want to talk about that. Well, who's watchful one? I can't even remember. They have to tell me every time who they are, and I forget. I always forget. Oh, Cheryl. Hi, Cheryl. I don't know what statement you agreed with.
A while ago.
Okay. Where are we?
I don't know. I got lost. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Distracted.
Oh, right at the top.
Sorry.
You must look at your faith and see where you are placing it before you can choose to place it with me. Many believe they have placed their faith in God, when truly they have placed their faith in men and in the world. Truly, I say to you, look at your faith honestly. In what do you believe? In what do you trust? And if it is not placed firmly with me in all things, are you willing to choose again? The call to truth.
Wait, okay. Read more?
I was going to finish up to that Bible verse.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
The call to truth is within you. Only by answering the call and receiving my guidance will you know what calls. Listen to me.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, so now we're calling it faith, but oops, I'm going to turn over the mic again. Now we're calling it faith, but it's the same thing. It's like you are a co-creator with God. So what are you believing in? Because it can be whatever you believe in, right? You can see separate bodies. If you want to see separate bodies and experience separate bodies, you got it. That's what we're doing here, right? That's why we seem to be having the experience we're having right now. So, you know, do I have faith that my brothers are out to get me? Do I have faith that I'm a body who has to get mine before you get yours? And, buddy, I'm going to push you out of the way to make sure that that happens. Is that where my faith is? Or do I have faith in what I'm learning? Do I have faith in what I'm being told here? Do I have faith that, no, in fact, we're really all one and that I can allow things to be as they are without fear that I won't have enough? So it's where am I focusing my attention? Am I focusing it on the personal self, the belief in lack and limitation? Or am I focusing it on the fullness of the moment? Am I focusing it on the uniqueness of the experience? Am I focusing it on, the completeness of God's creation and what I'm experiencing in my brother? You know, am I seeing wholeness or am I seeing limitation? That choice is mine. It's a matter of where I'm placing my faith. What am I believing?
Hmm. Thank you, honey. That's great. And I mentioned often that I've been looking a lot at Nisargadatta Maharaj. And as I look at his teachings, and mostly I'm just listening to a particular segment, I'm very careful to have no respect for Nisargadatta Maharaj. There is a truth. There is the truth, and that's what I hear. I find it inauthentic to cling to any form or any form figure. What I hear coming from him is so pure. What I hear coming from that emanation is so pure. I'm just so grounded. I feel myself, and I'm just grounded in the ground of being when I'm listening, really sitting silently, and just grounded in the truth, to what degree I can, which sometimes feels really, really just, I won't say blissful. I don't know that state, but it's just really a higher state. So what I'm looking at here is watch where you're placing your faith. And I saw a post, and it's probably not too good for me to look at Facebook too much, but I saw a post on Facebook, and it was about somebody bowing at the feet of a teacher that I just found really inauthentic. And I found it inauthentic, but I know I'm looking at myself. At the same time, I know there's a judgment that's going out, but I think it's important to recognize that this is not somebody else doesn't give this to you. It's there. It's right within you. It's right in front of us, right within us, and it's up to us to reach out and grab it in each moment, and that's what it takes for self-realization. It is a constant earnestness that might be redundant. I don't know.
I don't know that it is.
All right. So we're at the Bible again, honey.
Oh, wow. Okay. We're reading a lot of the Bible tonight. Cheryl says that's the expansion that we're describing. I'm not sure if she was referring to something you said, I said, or we said. It's all good, right? Mm. All right, let's look at this. All right. Matthew 21:33-44 from the Bible, the parable of the tenants. Listen to another parable, the Bible says. Listen to another parable. There was a landowner who planted a vineyard. He put a wall around it, dug a wine press in it, and built a watchtower. Then he rented the vineyard to some farmers and moved to another place. When the harvest time approached, he sent his servants to the tenants to collect his fruit. The tenants seized his servants. They beat one, killed another, and stoned a third. Then he sent other servants to them more than the first time, and the tenants treated them the same way. Excuse me. Last of all, he sent his son to them. They will respect my son, he said. But when the tenants saw the son, they said to each other, "This is the heir. Come, let's kill him and take his inheritance." So they took him and threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. Therefore, when the owner of the vineyard comes, what will he do to those tenants? He will bring those wretches to a wretched end, they replied, and he will rent the vineyard to other tenants who will give him his share of the crop at harvest time. Jesus said to them, "Have you never read in the scriptures, the stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone? The Lord has done this, and it is marvelous in our eyes. Therefore, I tell you that the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people who will produce its fruit."
Anyone who falls on this stone will be broken to pieces. Anyone on whom it falls will be crushed. Well, that's a happy little story, isn't it? Yeah. Let's see what it means.
That Matthew's got such a light touch.
Cheryl says all of it's what expansion. All right. So let's see the story.
The belief in separation is the death of the Son of God, and yet you choose to put your faith there. For that which is whole cannot be separate and live. To live, it must be one.
Sorry.
Your expectations confuse you. Let go of them and listen to me, one word at a time. The Son of God cannot die, because the Son of God cannot be separate. But in your belief that he is separate, you will find the belief in death. And that belief will seem real to you, as long as the belief in separation also seems real. The answer to this parable about the landowner and his tenants is a simple one. As long as the tenants continue to believe they are separate and attacked, they will live as if they are separate and attacked, and that will be their experience.
Amen.
It matters not where they go, for they take themselves with them. But when they open their eyes and realize that they have never been treated unfairly and they have never been attacked, their perception of being attacked will end. And again, there's an undercurrent here that always runs through it, and that's the belief in the body, the belief in personhood. As long as the person and the body is seen as primary, the body and the I thought that goes with it, then there will always be this tumultuous relationship with the world. And I'm not going to get into it. I was just working. It came to me today, but I'm going to work it out a little bit more before I say anything on it. So I'm going to continue unless you had something.
No, I was just going to finish that up.
Okay.
I mean, go ahead.
All right. This is how it is for you. For what is in your mind is in your world. And it is in your mind and in your world because you willed it to be there. So you must lay down your will, just as the tenants must lay down their implements of war. Only in this way will there be peace. Listen to me. To hear me, but not to practice what I say, is not to listen. And so I say to you, listen to me. It is the message of love.
Yeah, so, I mean, excuse me, this is exactly what we were saying a minute ago. We're co-creators. We're creating this thing. So whatever we want to believe, wherever we put our faith, that's what we're creating. You know, it's that perceptual loop that Regina talks about, right? I don't know. It never comes to me. I talk about it all the time, and the words yet just don't come into my mind. But the idea is, you know, you see what you expect to see. And it's a loop that you have to step out of. And I'm not saying this just as a concept. I've seen it. I've seen it in action, and it's an amazing thing. If you continue, you know, if you think, oh, poor, pitiful me, I'm being treated poorly. I don't know why these people are always treating me so poorly, you know. And if you go on with that thought process, you won't get out of that loop. You will never be treated fairly. You will never be treated the way you ought to be treated. Because this is what you want to believe. And so you have to act with faith beyond what your experience seems to be. I'm done. Thank That's you. All I've got.
brings to me, Jesus says, I will go prepare a place for you. And before every thought, the power goes first. The consciousness must be there in order for it to have ground. So Jesus is continually preparing a place for us, or spirit, or consciousness, whatever you want to refer to it as. If I choose to impose a limited self in that place where all power exists, then all power is given to that I thought. All power is invested in that I thought.
Even the power to make this limited self seem so real.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and so, you know, and like the Course says, I think it's in like chapter 28, it's talking about, look, you made this body, this sense of a separate self, to prove to you that you're separate. So when you're looking out through your body's eyes and you're believing what your body tells you, what your senses tell you, your senses are just reporting back what you told them to report to you, which is that you're a separate self. So you can't place your faith there. Again, you have to place your faith beyond your experience, or you will always only have that experience.
Right.
If that's what you want to do, that's great, but there's much more beyond that experience.
Yeah, we can look instead at the same example that we're looking at of making it separate and just be in awe of the power that we have.
Right.
That we can actually convolute ourselves to such a degree that we're clawing at the gates, you know. So that power is just immense. And in the hands of the I thought, it seems insurmountable. And that's why the inner wisdom, the willingness to be silent and just go within and recognize that power, recognize the power of your will, is disproportionately important.
Disproportionately, maybe just proportionately. But yeah, Cheryl says, you're writer, producer, actor, and director of our own
right.
reality.
That's right.
And hero of the dream.
Right. We're going to continue.
Yes, we
Thank
are.
You, Shirley.
It's Cheryl.
Oh, Cheryl. I apologize. NTI Matthew chapter 22.
Oh,
we're back.
We're back in the Bible. So let's go back to the Bible. I know this. We don't do this often. We're changing chairs here, but that's all right. Let's see. So we are chapter 22, verses 1 through 10. All right. The parable of the wedding banquet. Jesus spoke to them again in parables, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who prepared a wedding banquet for his son. He sent his servants to those who had been invited to the banquet to tell them to come, but they refused to come. Then he sent some more servants and said, tell those who have been invited that I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fatted cattle have been butchered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding banquet. But they paid no attention and went off, one to his field, another to his business. The rest seized his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged. He sent his army and destroyed those murderers and burned their city. Then he said to his servants, the wedding banquet is ready, but those I invited did not deserve to come. So go to the secret corners and invite to the banquet anyone you find. So the servants went out into the streets and gathered all the people they could find, the bad as well as the good, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. I tell you what, it's a tough time to be a servant. I think you could kill them.
Right. Yeah. All All right. The kingdom of heaven is like a wedding banquet. For marriage is the symbol of joining, and the kingdom of heaven is joining. But at this wedding banquet, there are no guests. For everyone who comes will find himself joined within the glory of this ceremony. All who come may see himself as bride or as groom. It is not important how he sees himself on coming. During the journey to the banquet, he may even see himself as an invited guest. As long as he is following his invitation to come, how he sees himself in the coming is not important. Some may seem to have a long journey to the wedding banquet with many distractions along the way. Others may seem to live closer and arrive quickly after hearing the call to come. The length of the journey is not important. The journey itself, or what seems to happen along its way, matters not. All are invited to the wedding banquet, and all in their time will arrive. It is upon arriving that they realize what they have been invited to attend. Upon that realization, all else will fall away. They will not remember if they were bride or groom or guest. They will not remember if the journey was short or long, with many distractions or few. All that they will know is that they have arrived and they are joined. I find it's really interesting, and it is a real pointer at how inconsequential, and I don't mean to say inconsequential in a way that is dismissive, right? But how inconsequential these human lives that we undertake, how inconsequential they truly are. We make such big productions, we become so dramatic over really incidental things, and it's just you know it's all this personality. It's the personality with its conditioning, and it's recognizing that it's just part of a system. And the system is based on opposites or opposition. It's always about opposition. And I always think of one of the first stories in the Bible is about Cain and Abel. And that was a story about opposition. And it's been, the first two brothers, and that has been a pretty good example of what has continued down through the ages. And
I just want to read a couple things on the board. Cindy's saying, he's saying in all these parables, why wait for heaven? And Cheryl says, heaven is a state of being, not a place. I was very excited when I had that aha moment.
That is really nice.
Yeah, and so this is really cool. It's like, it's funny because I spent a lot of time looking at the particulars of my journey, and we can go, oh, and we can compare, and for heaven's sakes, that guy started last week, and what, he's awake already, and gosh, I've been doing this for 30 years, and I'm not saying my mind always works that way, but well, my mind always works that way. I'm not saying that I always dwell on those things, but certainly I hear them. It's just really cool to say, come get there however you can. Because that's really not important. What's important is the destination, which is the banquet where we're all joined together.
Right. And we got just a couple minutes.
A couple minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But I did want to say, Cheryl, that, you know, it's really cool, like what you posted, heaven is a state of being, not a place. I was very excited when I had that aha moment. It's so cool when you have, there's a new way of understanding. That's, you know, it's you went beyond a physical. There was a physical barrier, and so it's just really cool to see that, because I know how that feels, and it's just really cool to have that experience when you pass a physical barrier, and it's you know it to be within yourself.
Yeah.
But we're pretty much
such grace, she says. It's such grace.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, amen. I don't know. I guess I thought we were going to 12 midnight here Eastern time, but we're not. Our time's up.
Yeah.
We love you guys. I love you guys.
Love you guys.
Yeah, thanks. We're just thrilled to be here with you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
And we'll see you next week.
We're going to send it back to Ken,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. All right.
Here we go, Ken.
Good night. Love you guys. Bye. See you next time.
Do I get a sign yet?
No, you just hit... Bye. We're really hanging up. Here, let me do it.